Did Jesus want to die? Hello, and welcome to Good Word, a program dedicated to exploring issues of faith and the Bible. Our discussion continues this week as we look at the last part of the Gospel of Luke, specifically Jesus in Jerusalem as he heads towards the cross. My name is Paul Dibdahl, and I'm joined by two conversation partners, Brant Berglund, a colleague of mine in the School of Theology, and Pam Kress, a professor in the School of Social Work and Sociology. All of us teach at Walla Walla University. Welcome to you both. So it's, I suppose, kind of a hypothetical question. I don't know that we could turn to a chapter and verse that would provide us a neat and tidy answer, but did Jesus want to die?
I get a sense that he was not excited about it, and maybe less so at the end of his life, when in the Garden of Gethsemane he asked that the cup be taken from him if it were possible. I think part of him shrank from what the cross meant, but it wasn't necessarily the cross, but what would happen on the cross. Mm-hmm. I think if it were just the instrument of torture, that would be something he could have endured.
Yeah, I think I would agree, but it comes for me from that human side. This was the human side of Jesus, which would be, as I would be, no, I'm wishing this cup. And I can remember times when I prayed that prayer just with my personal struggles of, would you please take this cup from me? It's too much to bear. And in some ways, it's almost encouraging to think that way, that this is an encouragement to me that when I go through hard things, that doesn't necessarily mean it's what God's will is for me, but that there will be comfort in someone to be there with me. And I think that's what Jesus was struggling with here.
Mm-hmm. Now, fairly early in Luke's gospel, back in chapter 9 of the gospel, Luke tells us, there's a little phrase there, it says, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And I think that's significant, and it speaks to the question that we just asked. You resolve to do things not that are easy or that you're just, you know, all gung-ho about, but you resolve to do things that you know, it seems to me, that you know they're the right thing to do, that you ought to do them, and you do it willingly. Jesus resolved to do that, but it wasn't going to be something easy.
Yeah, it kind of spoke to commitment and acceptance of something, but they didn't define it as he courageously or he triumphantly or... Yeah.
Excitedly.
Excitedly, yeah.
Resolutely.
Resolutely is the word.
Or steadfastly headed for Jerusalem. As Jesus is entering into Jerusalem here, right? We're talking about the last week or so of his life leading up to his crucifixion. He sent two disciples ahead of him to find an unbroken colt. And he climbs onto that animal and enters into Jerusalem to great shouts from the people. What's happening here? What's the background? How would Jesus' disciples have understood this? Either of you?
Yeah, I think there are several pieces that I think they would recognize, probably plenty. Two come to my mind. The first one is a king comes into a conquered territory riding on a donkey. Mm-hmm. And that's significant, as well as the fact that it fulfills the gospel writer says, you know, this is a fulfillment of an Old Testament prophecy that suggests that Jesus would come riding on a donkey in Zechariah 9:9. But I'm wondering also about the Passover meal that's about to take place. The Passover celebration is just a few days away. And the Jewish culture was told, bring a lamb into your house 4 days before the Passover and let it live there with you, feed it from your table, and it becomes your pet, and then it's sacrificed. And here Jesus is, you know, the end of the fifth day, 4 days just before the Passover, coming into Jerusalem, the city of his own. Mm-hmm. So maybe if the disciples were open to seeing it, a conquering king, but also the lamb.
A lamb entering into Jerusalem. Maybe one of those things after the fact that as they reflected back on what had occurred, they may have seen that symbolism there.
Or they may not have been shouting the same sort of hosannas that they were.
Yeah, that's it right. Seems to me right now, as they're going after this donkey, that they're really at this point where this kingdom now is going to be fulfilled. We're finally getting to the good stuff mm-hmm. now. Everybody's happy about this. He's extremely popular, even to the point of all you have to do is say, the Lord has need of this, and everybody knows who the Lord yeah. was.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about the kingdom of God last week, and now we're using some similar terminology. What are the people expecting? What sort of kingdom are they expecting Jesus to establish at this point?
I'm just guessing here. You guys are the theologians, but I think it's to do, you know, get rid of Roman rule, and
okay.
you're going to make things much better for this Jewish population.
They're thinking in rather literal terms, aren't
right,
they, Brent?
Very
would
literal.
You agree?
I would think so. The hopes of Old Testament prophets were that there would be a king like David, even David himself, who mm-hmm. would come back to reign, and think about the reign of David and Solomon. Those were grand times, the golden years of Israel's monarchy, to have mm-hmm. those times again. I think those were hopes that were on their minds.
Yeah. What's the problem then with the Pharisees? Because the crowd's shouting joyfully, noisily, and the Pharisees are wanting everyone to quiet down, to settle down. What's the problem with them? Is it just jealousy? Maybe that wasn't a good question to ask. Is it the noise?
Well, it could be a little bit of both. Because you think about communities and cultures and things that are acceptable versus things that are not acceptable. But I would imagine on their minds was, this is the guy we've been following around, who we think is saying all the wrong things, and now all the people are celebrating.
Yeah.
And if he becomes king, how do we look? By we're supposed to be the religious leaders who are the first to accept the Messiah, should be the first to understand him. And if he truly is Messiah, it puts us in an awkward place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So not everybody was happy as Jesus entered into Jerusalem. The Pharisees mm-hmm. were not. And there's one other person who doesn't seem to be quite as joyful, and that's Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm. He's crying.
He's weeping, Luke tells us. So you have this juxtaposition of joyful crowds, and then the one they are rejoicing over is crying as he enters into Jerusalem. Jesus does cry on mm-hmm. a couple of other occasions. Mm-hmm. Well, one in particular we think of where Jesus wept at the tomb of Lazarus. Was Jesus an emotional person?
We don't seem to see Jesus being uncontrollably emotional, if we can use that term, but he wasn't afraid to. He used humor. Mm-hmm. He let his heart show, especially when it was over those who were not going to accept. I mean, his tears here over Jerusalem that would reject him, his tears at the tomb of Lazarus, not just when his friend died, but at the conclusion of that story, when the Pharisees seek a way to kill him, those who were his own that don't receive him. Jesus is openly emotional, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but not inappropriately so.
Well, not now, maybe so. But later on in Luke, he talks about Jesus entering the temple.
And cleansing the temple.
Mm-hmm. Cleansing the temple, throwing over tables and
the zeal
saying,
of
get
the
out.
Lord consumes him.
That seems pretty out of control. At least some people would want to describe it as such.
Mm. So now, what do we say? Not inappropriately emotional, not uncontrollable, and yet he does some things that, at least from our perspective, we can use words like zeal. Somehow that mm-hmm. older word sounds more holy.
But borders on violence and abuse, right?
Right, yes. I picture him yelling. He's got a whip in his hand. And
turning over tables.
Pretty much justifies me when I want to do those kinds
people,
of things.
Don't people do that sometimes?
Yes,
they say,
we do.
This is righteous indignation, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow justifying it. Help me out with this, because I'm a little, I am uncomfortable with saying Jesus was uncontrollably emotional.
Well, I don't know that I would say uncontrollably emotional.
We didn't,
emotion.
Quite
we
say
didn't
that,
go
did
all
we?
The way there, but I do think that he was had heightened emotions, perhaps, is okay. what we would say, and as was looking at him and thinking about him as being this kind of sedate human being,
the meek
it just
and lowly
doesn't
Jesus.
Wash yeah. when you yeah. when you yeah. think about that.
I have an issue with the way that Jesus is often portrayed in film. So mm-hmm. our kids are mostly grown up now, but early on, you know, there's various dramatic depictions of Jesus' life on earth, and those are can be great. But even without sound, just watching, Jesus seemed to move, generally speaking, he kind of moved in slow motion, and there mm-hmm. really wasn't a lot of feeling to mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. And I personally appreciate these instances in the Gospels where we get a window into the passion of Jesus. And whether it's tears, I'm mm-hmm. okay with that. Yep. Whether it's anger at the injustice that was taking place in the temple, the way in which poor people were being cheated in the place that was supposed to be a place of prayer. And even Jesus' anger there, I'll borrow now from Alden Thompson, who notes, I'm not sure that it's the Gospel of Luke, but one of the Gospels of Luke, right as Jesus is cleansing the temple, we find the money changers and everybody else seems terribly intimidated, but the children come to him.
Yeah. Right.
And Alden has always said, boy, I would like to be the type of person that that when I am angry, children are attracted mm-hmm. to me somehow. So maybe that's a way of, I don't know if it's smoothing it over, but exploring the issue in a way that for me at least is meaningful. Mm. As Jesus enters into Jerusalem, he also says, as part of his reflection there, he says, speaking of Jerusalem, you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. How is it possible, or is it possible even today, to somehow miss the time when God comes to us?
It's possible if we have an expectation of what that coming will look like. The Old Testament had right. prophesied that the Lord would come suddenly to his temple, and one greater than even the you know, the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire in the Old Testament had showed up, because he showed up in person, and there was Israel's God in person in the temple, and they didn't recognize him. If he comes differently than I expect, then maybe. Mm-hmm.
Which brings to mind again what we talked a little bit about last week, was the peaceable kingdom moments, mm-hmm. because those are visits, I believe, from God in ways that are in our natural world every day, and we miss them mm-hmm. because we aren't expecting God to talk to us in those ways or
but
be with us
looking
in those
back,
ways.
We might say, God was there, but I
missed it.
Yeah.
Let's ask, I think we can actually pray about this and ask God for help, that we would be more sensitive to those times when indeed God is reaching out to us, God mm-hmm. comes to us. Thank you, Pam and Brant, for your willingness to share. Thanks also to David Olson, our program engineer. And thank you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.